You're listening to Changing Minds, Transformative Talks for Healthcare Improvement. Grab a coffee or tea and join our team as we chat with leaders in the academic detailing space. For more information on academic detailing, visit us at narcat.org.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Changing Minds podcast. I'm your host, Bevan Amira, standing in for Anna Morgan Barsamian as she grows her brood and will be back from her maternity leave later this fall slash winter. But in the interim, I'm having a blast here, and this will be my third podcast, and I couldn't be more excited to have are just the most unique and wonderful person that was at our conference last year. Zach Genio, thank you so much for being here. Zach is the program manager at Be The Vibe, and that's Be Like a Bumblebee. It's a harm reduction program at Mile High Behavioral Healthcare in Denver, Colorado, and really just such an expert in everything from the data to the application, harm reduction being the name of the game. And of course, we could not leave out that you are a celebrity in Denver and beyond as a drag queen. She is Dr. Jenny Ho, which of course we want to say not a licensed doctor, but a doctor of the people, a bringing together of the community. And I would really love to see one of your shows someday. I mean, I just love all things, the camp and the glamour pieces that you talk about in your bio are just the essence of what is so beautiful about drag and also self-expression. So welcome, and tell us how you are. And I know you've just come off of a busy Pride Month. How are you doing?
Gosh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be chatting with you. I am doing well. I have taken a week off at the beginning of July.
Good for you.
Pride becomes obviously our busiest time of the year, both with all of the drag that I do and then working with our queer organization. So all day long I'm at Pride events, and then all night long I'm at Pride events. So I just have to hibernate for a second after
Pride.
Are you
an extrovert by nature, or are you an ambivert? I can't tell.
I'm definitely more of the ambivert like style of I need to recharge alone. I need to just lock myself in, get under the blankets, watch the Netflix shows.
Yes. Cocoon. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Have a huddle with yourself. Yes.
Yeah. So we always say we're like on summer break because we all end up taking time off in July, but we're doing well. We had a really great Pride. It was great to be out with all the community. Pride felt a little different this year. And I think across the board, people were feeling it of just, you know, kind of the unknown. And with everything going on in the US and in the world, there's definitely different fears and concerns and just a different tone. So it was not as, you know, extravagant as it has been in the past, but it was definitely one of those prides where it was a necessity of all of us coming together and showing up for the community and being present throughout the kind of constantly changing times that we're living in day to day.
Yes, constantly changing is definitely the name of the game. And I just want to highlight the fact that, you know, community can be all sorts of things. It can be joy, it can be expression, it can be, you know, a bonding together over shared identities, it can be embracing new identities and folks getting together who wouldn't have met without that community. But right now we are really hearing from our community and public health detailing and from so many other folks who, you know, like the queer community are marginalized, that this is a year and a time where community is the glue. It's not, you know, it's so much more than just a safe place to be. It's a place that, is a need. It's an absolute need. Community is, you know, right after, you know, water and air and food and shelter.
100%.
Community is key. So talk to me a little bit about how you have found yourself at this point in your life, in your career, as having just this wild convergence of drag and of celebration and of artistry, and then also being, you know, would you say you're a community activist in a way? Like, how would you identify your community role?
Absolutely. I, as a young queer kid, was very, well, young closeted, but still very queer, was a big theater kid. I loved attention, loved the stage.
Yes, me too.
Who would have thunk, you know? The two people talking on a podcast love being able to talk with people. And so when I was younger, I had found drag, and it wasn't until later in my life that I was like, you know, let's try this. Let's pursue it. Let's see. This could be fun. And I was very inspired when I started by the drag queen Patagonia, because she does this really cool work where she combines drag with environmental activism. And I was like, that's so neat. Why can I not do that with my passions? Which for me, it was public health. It was STI testing. It was, you know, queer healthcare. And I was like, that seems like it'd be another easy jump, right? So I had always kind of thought about when I started drag of my drag, both asking and answering the question, what if your primary care provider was slaying, right? Like, what if your primary care provider served? And so that was kind of the beginning of it, where I created Dr. Zacharina with this goal in mind of wanting to bridge these gaps, leverage the fun and camp and glamour of drag to be that foot in the door, to get some cool things going, to have some conversations about queer healthcare, PrEP, HIV testing, you know, safer substance use, stuff like that. And then with my role and my day job working at Mile High, it was too easy to bring the two together. So rather than kind of living a Hannah Montana split life of day Zach versus night Zacharina, I was able to bring them both in and really have them support each other. So it kind of just became this really natural pairing of Zacharina gets me into the clubs, and then Zach helps bring in all of the resources. But yeah, all of it really goes back to, huge shout out to Patagonia, who I actually have had the pleasure of working with 2 years in a row now. So it's very full circle moment. But that idea of like, let's just bring these two cool things together and
why not?
Right? Like, the Venn diagram became a lot more of a circle as I figured it out, right? Like, there's a lot of overlap.
I love that so much. And I just want to say, the fact that you said it was too easy to put these together. Sometimes there are things that become a fusion that we think, how did this happen? And then just as you described it, it's such a natural fit. And one thing that I think is particularly fantastic about this combination, besides the fact that Dr. Zacharina, she is gorgeous. We have seen her all gussied up, but not live. We're hoping maybe sometime we can get the NARCAD crew out to Denver, but I digress. One thing that just seems so profound is how often we at NARCAD hear from public health groups who are doing HIV prevention related detailing that clinicians are uncomfortable talking about sex, which, you know, there's a whole lot of reasons for that. But if you throw drag in the mix, it's sort of like, hey, we're throwing things out there. We're throwing identities out there. We're getting colorful. We're changing what we think of as the clinical setting, with the very white coats and the sterile walls, and just this beautiful expression of being alive and of wanting to celebrate sexual connection in a safe and healthy way. Of course it makes sense. And I also feel like you're one of those people that could convince me of anything to begin with, which is, and I say that as a compliment. You just have this wonderful way of just making the people to whom you are communicating feel, you know, seen and understood. How did you know that you wanted to get into public health? Was it something you just knew around the same time that you knew you loved theater? And by the way, I am an Emerson girl. That's something that I keep in my back pocket. But yes, love all things theater.
Yeah, I actually for the longest time wanted to be a medical doctor. I thought my career path was going to medical school, and the best thing that could have ever happened to me is I got rejected from every school I applied to.
I love the
And
framing that that's the best thing. Yes, keep going.
literally the best thing, because I realized, and I had really amazing mentors when I was in college and doing my graduate program who helped me, show me that to make a change when it comes to healthcare and public health in the US and in the world, you don't have to be an MD to do that. And that
Correct.
helped shatter that like idea of I need to be this type of person to do these things. And so it started there of figuring out like, okay, this is something that I'm really passionate about. But I actually read this one article. And it was a study where they looked at health advocates in the Bronx in New York of using barbers as health advocates
Yes.
for prostate cancer. And I thought that was the neatest thing. I was like
So good.
utilizing a community leader, this person who is just trusted. I
Yes,
was
the
like,
truth.
that's so cool. And I also am a person who has had really negative healthcare experiences. So I'm like, if I don't have to talk to, I love my primary care providers out there. You are amazing, and we can improve sometimes. And so I'm like, if I
We'll
don't
get
have
to
to
that in a
interact.
moment. Yep.
Right. So I was like, if I can interact with somebody I trust more, that'd be really cool. Which then the next thought was, who is that community leader for queer communities? And for some folks in certain spaces, it's drag queens. I always
Yes.
talk about how there's what I call wig privilege, where once I have a wig on, people listen to me. You
Yes.
know, it's once you see the big drag queen and the big hair, there's just this draw, this innate like attracting nature. And so
Yes.
it felt like this no-brainer of, oh, that is such a natural step one, step two, step three that led me into thinking about how drag queens can really be something to mobilize public health in a way that is getting into, right, meeting people where they're at, into the club, into the spaces where we know people are doing drugs and having sex at clubs. They're not
Yes.
doing it in the doctor's office, right? And so we know that we're
They
able to
might
like,
be. But yes, I
well,
got you.
if they are, I need to know. No,
More power
okay.
to
Right? Like that's fierce. Turn the clinic into a party. But
them. But yes,
yeah, that was kind of the
meeting them
journey.
where they're at, you know, just like our last podcast guest, Rocco Cook from Arizona, was talking about how in the 90s and early aughts, I believe, they were in bathhouses and sort of going there to do testing and to talk about safe sex. And they talked about that. So I see some overlap there. But back to you.
Absolutely. That's exactly that whole model of going out to the clubs, going into those spaces, but taking it a step further in creating an army of champions with you, this whole gaggle
Yes.
of drag queens that can help share and spread your message. And especially where there's a time of different funding
Different
streams
is the
for purple.
adjective.
Exactly. The idea of like being able to increase your capacity again felt like a no-brainer. So that was the journey of public health into this, where again, it really just made sense of why can't I apply this same philosophy that worked up in New York into Denver, into these drag scenes? All I'm doing is like Mad Libs, changing a couple of the words, changing some of the nouns, and it
Yes.
still can work.
I love it, but you're focusing on the same cornerstones, which is trusting relationships, which is places that folks can go where they feel safe and seen. And I want to get back just really briefly to what you said about the wig privilege. I think what is so, one of the many things that is so compelling about drag is the bigness to be in yourself and in your sense of self-expression attracting people. That is something, especially when it comes to drag queens, it's femininity at its biggest in a way. And that is something that is particularly beautiful at all times. But right now, when we're seeing women's healthcare and women, and access for folks who are queer just being cut left, right, and center, to have that be the tool of femininity and grandness, connecting people towards better health outcomes is a beautiful thing. And I love that so much. I want to kind of get back to what you said a moment ago around, I love my primary care clinicians out there. We could be doing things a little better, I might be paraphrasing, but talk to me about, so the queer community, I know that you work very, very extensively in Denver. So maybe you can speak to Denver, or maybe even more broadly, if it feels right. But when you think about the needs the queer community has right now, and it could be health in general, health and safety and wellness, and also related to, you know, the sub area that you're such an expert in around sexual health and HIV prevention and education, what are some of the biggest gaps you see between what clinicians are doing and what they should be doing? Because I think that's something that detailing really serves to bridge a gap like that. So if we can bring some of the fabulous thinking that you've had around safety and trust and community and connection, can we bring that into the clinics? Can we, can we do there?
I think the thing that makes detailing so strong is, yes, it teaches, yes, it's that one-on-one model, all the evidence that supports it. But in my opinion, it's the fact that the detailer is going into a community, going into a space and saying, we want to show that we care about this population, about this group, and we want to help you all care more. We want to show that, because for me, nothing is better than when I'm in a space and I can tell that people are making an effort. There's that effort to understand culturally who I am. There's an effort to try to learn and get me connected, linked with the resources and care that's going to help me the best. And so I always talk about one of the really strong reasons when I was younger that got me thinking about like healthcare, health, public health, was when I first wanted to go and get on PrEP with my primary care provider. And I had a really negative experience. I was shamed for my choices. My provider did not know what PrEP was. There were a lot of assumptions made about me throughout the process. And so I actually didn't get on PrEP for almost another 6 months, because after that experience, I was like, I don't want to go back to the clinic. I don't want to go back to the doctor.
Of course not.
Because it was not a positive experience. And that's for me as a white, like cis-assuming man kind of going through the world. So I was like, let alone if I had other identities that were intersecting, how would
Sure, if you were a person of color, if you were trans, it would be all the more complicated and so much more, many more layers of stigma.
Exactly. Luckily, I went back because I was like, I'm determined to do this. I want to, take this step for myself, and ended up working with that same provider and teaching them. And they are now the number one provider of PrEP for, Raleigh, North Carolina.
You were a detailer before you even knew it. You were like, exactly. Look, here are the marks you need to be hitting.
Right. And it was the conversations of having those resources, having that knowledge, having that tool belt, that toolbox that you're able to pull out of, right? If you have somebody who doesn't want to use XYZ resources, why are we going to waste our time talking about it when there are hundreds of other resources we can dig into?
Yes.
And so I think for me with primary care providers, I think the first is understanding that you don't know everything and coming to terms and peace with that. Nothing is more liberating than knowing that you are not the smartest person in the room. It is the best feeling.
Right? Isn't that Socrates or Aristotle? I can't remember which, who said the wisest man is he who knows that he knows nothing. And that is that's a tall order, Zach, for primary care clinicians, I will say. But
right? I'm like, Helen, that could even have been RuPaul that said it. Who knows? But it really is. It's like, it liberates you as a person to be able to learn more and be open to learning more. And I think that's the first part. The second part is, and it's something that I always talk about with harm reduction principles, where providing resources and care in a non-judgmental, non-coercive way is what's so important. And that comes with knowing what resources exist. If you are a provider, we want the resources that you have to be like a buffet, so that if you get the person where they're like, I love pasta, you can dig into the pasta section. You can go down those rabbit holes. But if you get that person that has like a shellfish allergy, right? Then we stay away from the seafood area. Then we have another place to go. But if all you have is the seafood in your pocket, if the only thing you have as a provider is condoms, full stop.
You're not meeting a need. You're not meeting the need. And you're not able to meet you're not able to afford your patient's agency and autonomy to make unique choices that fit their lifestyles and their needs.
100%. Our job is not to tell people what to do. It's to educate, provide all those tools, and support them on their journey. I always say clients, patients are the ones in the driver's seat. We're all in the navigator seat. We got the MapQuest printed out. We got the GPS, and we're trying to figure out the best way to get there with them. But they're the ones driving the car, not us.
I love that. And so as we wrap up, what I would love, and this may be a tall order, is sort of how can we leave clinicians, let me put it this way, those of us in public health who seek to educate the clinicians who will then be educating the patients, how do we find a way to communicate to them how key it is to be in that best supporting actor or actress position versus grabbing the wheel? What are some ways that you have found that can get folks, maybe even beyond clinicians, thinking about how to empower others and drop the reins a bit? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is connecting and knowing your population. And sometimes that means going out on the Friday night after work and going to the drag show, going into the gay bar and seeing what's going on, and learning from the space, learning to be a part of it, learning about the culture, and having those folks who want to be champions in those communities, listening to them, supporting them, and uplifting them to do that. Because when the folks with lived experience come to the table, we want to make sure that those voices are actually heard. And sometimes that table, it's all white coats and it's all, you know, certain people of certain demographics that might not include the folks that we want to serve. And so if that's the case, we have to go out and find those people ourselves. We need to learn and educate ourselves on all levels. A textbook is amazing. Real world experiences make the difference.
It's invaluable. And I love that. I mean, the nuggets you just distilled right there are so poignant, because a lot of times we say things like invite the patient experience in. Maybe we need to enter their world and their space. And that's something that I think all of the public health detailing aficionados listening can think about. How do we encourage the clinicians with whom we visit and have these one-to-one conversations to expand their field of vision beyond what happens right there in that clinic? And that's a wonderful thing to chew on. I know that our listeners will be thinking about that and everything else you've shared. I wish we had hours to chat with you. Everyone listening, you are in for a treat if you have not seen Zach's presentation at the NARCAD Annual International Conference. I will be adding it as a link underneath this podcast episode. But I just want to say thank you so much. And anything you'd like to close with in terms of, you know, you seem like you're able to really keep a sense of buoyancy. And I'm sure self-care and taking that week off after Pride was a big part of it. Mm-hmm. But what can you impart to our listeners around trying to keep the faith right now in a time that is just so extremely difficult and where the word unprecedented has been used in a precedented way? What can you offer to folks that might allow them to see opportunity to connect dots the way that you have?
I think, for me, something that has helped reduce my burnout of being a drag queen and being a public health professional are two things that alone could burn somebody out, right? Yeah. For me, it's this idea of when I bring my passions together, that's what ignites me even more. When I started doing drag, Zach and Zacharina were very separate people. It was a very Jekyll and Hyde situation. Wake up as Zach, go to sleep as Zacharina. But I think as time has progressed, I've learned that Zach and Zacharina are the same person. It's just one is wearing a much prettier and more expensive outfit than the other. And so I think with that, kind of that mentality has helped me where everything is flowing together. And what I'm focusing on is the things that I love. It's that working with my queer communities, working in the nightlife scene when it comes to harm reduction fills up my cup and hits our priority populations in a very unique and intentional way. And so, whatever those passions are for you, realigning with them and really digging those heels in so that you are getting that cup filled. You are not having to live separate lives. It's not here are my passions in life and here's what I'm doing at work. It's my passions are influencing the way that I'm working, that my passions are what is guiding me through my work. And I think, you know, everything with work, obviously, self-care, take the breaks, don't dream of labor, all the things. And we want to do this work. We're here to do this work. So we want to make sure that we are enjoying this work, and it's something that we love and are passionate about. So all of us got into this, not for the money. We did it because we love it. And so I think finding and refining that reason amongst everything that's going on right now, it for me has continued to ground me and remind me of that why, even when things have continued to get harder to do the job.
So finding those threads of nourishment and weaving them into the tapestry of day to day so that it's not, this is the 1 hour I have to do this hobby that makes me feel like I can get by, and instead think creatively. And Zach just gives a perfect example of things that seem like maybe they wouldn't go together at first glance. That's because the mold hasn't been broken yet. So be a mold breaker, make the connections between the things that are beautiful in your worlds. And thank you again, Zach. We'll definitely love to hear what folks have to say listening to you chat, and looking forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. So much fun.
It was a pleasure.